This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
And now let's go back to our live reading of this morning's Journal Gazette with Jennifer and Stuart.
We're back from our break. We're reading the Weekender section from the Friday, February 21st Journal Gazette. And here's Stuart with the horoscopes.
Horoscopes today by Holiday Mathis, Creators Syndicate. Aries, March 21 to April 19. Am I okay? Is a question many wouldn't think to ask. Asking already puts you in the realm of self-reflection. That means you're so much more than okay. Go deeper today and ask, what might bring about my thriving? Taurus, April 20 to May 20. Not everyone in your circle is living up to the values you hold dear. You may worry about being guilty by association, but you needn't. You're building a legacy that's entirely your own, and that's something that faults of others cannot touch. For Gemini, May 21 to June 21. You honor a person's preferences, which speaks to the deep respect and care you show others. You'll give the sweetest gestures, celebrating someone while respecting their wishes. Cancer, June 22 to July 22. Good will come out of your interactions with people who think differently. Sometimes people are thinking small, but they have big hearts. You don't have to change another person's mind to connect in some way. While intending to find common ground, you will. Leo, July 23 to August 22. It's okay to feel nervous. It means you care, and that caring is what drives you forward. Wishing for support is natural, but even without someone beside you in the moment, you're still capable of navigating this on your own terms. Virgo, August 23 to September 22. Emotions have their own timing. When you're going through something, just remember that it's temporary. You have a very stable set point you will return to. There's a cheerful vibe just waiting on the other side of this with open arms. Libra, September 23 to October 23. Some believe we're born unknowing, while others argue we enter the world fully aware, only to spend our lives unlearning, striving to rediscover that knowledge. Whatever your theory may be, today you will put it to the test. Scorpio, October 24 to November 21. Your priorities will shift again. As they do, you'll think about making tweaks to your current lifestyle in the interest of creating a more supportive and nourishing environment for your thriving. Sagittarius, November 22 to December 21. Your relationship with earth signs, the Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn types, will help you stay calm and grounded, work through problem-solving strategies, and provide a sounding board for any ideas or challenges that come up. Capricorn, December 22 to January 19. There's no reason to force things. It may feel like people are asking you to feel differently than you do, which is not only rather controlling of them, it might be an impossible ask. Still, you can move forward graciously, choosing what to engage with. Aquarius, January 20 to February 18. You seek connection and lightness and thrive in dynamics that feel mutual. So, when someone operates with a different approach, it could throw you for a loop, which is a sign that you are alert and all systems are working correctly. Pisces, February 19 to March 20. You've already proven your creativity and drive. You may wonder if you can stay calm and solve the problems that come up, but others believe you can. So you may as well believe right along with them. Today's birthday, this trip around the sun, you'll be many roles, a teacher and a student, a leader and a devoted fan, a cherished confidant and a spokesperson. In the moments you live and love big, you'll be met with equal enthusiasm and capability. More highlights, many sales, fast trades, lucrative deals. Lifestyle modifications contribute to vibrant health and new sources of fun. Taurus and Cancer adore you. Your lucky numbers are 2, 29, 1, 24, and 16.
Next is the first of three advice columns. Dear Annie. Annie Lane is a Creator Syndicate advice columnist. Send a question to DearAnnie@creators.com. Keep silent on parenting advice. Dear Annie, I believe it's a bad idea for people to share their unsolicited opinions on other people's parenting, especially not someone like me, who is young, single, childless, and barely knows what to do with my own life. Still, I can't help but worry about my brother's lifestyle. His house is a mess, and not just a child lives here kind of messy, but the kind where the dining room is never used to dine in because the chairs and tables are always occupied with things. His four-year-old daughter sleeps in her parents' bed, which they don't like, but won't send her to her own bed. I'm afraid their home is slowly looking more and more like those in Hoarders. What worries me the most is that their lifestyle reminds me of a friend from childhood who is very troubled and has tried to commit suicide several times. Alarmist person that I am, I want to inform my brother of this, but I suppose it's too far-fetched. Signed, The Nosy Aunt. Dear Nosy Aunt, you clearly have good intentions, but your instinct is also correct that unsolicited parenting advice from someone without kids rarely goes over well. Instead of focusing on criticism, focus on support. If they mention feeling overwhelmed, offer your services to help declutter and organize. Of course, if you believe their child is legitimately in danger, then you need to contact social services. Dear Annie, about a year and a half ago, my husband's uncle helped us hire a cleaning lady. The only problem I have is that she asks us very personal questions, and we always answer politely. But she has to detect that my husband and I get annoyed. Some of the questions include, how long have you worked at your current job? Oh, you got a new bed? Are you going to work after I leave? Where did you get that shampoo? Etc. I'm afraid to get too personal because I feel it goes against our boundaries. She is there to clean. Respect should obviously be given on both sides, and she is getting paid. That's how I feel it should stay. What is your opinion? Signed, Guarded in Aspen. Dear Guarded, keep up your short, vague replies and try making yourself scarce when she's there to limit room for conversation in the first place. If she still doesn't pick up these subtle cues, verbalize your boundaries firmly to her. You're paying for a service, not a friendship with this woman. It's more than fair to want to keep things pleasant, but professional.
And now advice from Heloise. Area reader gives tip on straws. Dear Heloise, have you ever needed a straw and couldn't find one? Here's what I do to end this problem. Every time I snag a soda or a shake, I toss the cup but keep the straw. I take the straws home and put them in the dishwasher. Over the course of a couple of months, you will have plenty of straws in various colors. Problem solved. After all, you did pay for it, so why not keep it? From David of Cherubusco. David, I am going to assume you mean a plastic straw. Some states want us to only use paper straws like we did in the 1950s. Reusing straws is a good idea and puts less in our landfills. Heloise. Dear Heloise, JT in Cincinnati gave some good advice on nasty finger cuts. I used to have the same problem, but not as much during the past two winters. Every night when going to bed, I rub petroleum healing jelly for babies on my fingertips, then spread it around my hands. It works perfectly. No more split skin. I found mine in the baby section at a local grocery store. Signed, Linda from Lincoln, Nebraska. Dear Heloise, I have water stains on my sink and dishwater front, both of which are stainless steel. How do I get rid of this problem? From Ashley of Shawnee, Oklahoma. Ashley, use equal parts water and white vinegar in a spray bottle. Let it sit for about 10 minutes and wipe clean. Or make a paste of baking soda and lemon juice, then apply it to the stainless steel. Let it set for about 5 minutes and wipe. The stain should be gone. Heloise. Dear Heloise, I dread summer. My husband and I retired in our lake house, and we really enjoy living here. However, we do not like drop-in visitors who think they can just come by any time and use our home as a place to dump their children, or they expect us to babysit, feed their children, or their family, let them use our towels, and much more. This past Christmas, we sent out a letter to our family, and we have a large one. We will not accept drop-ins or be babysitting, and that they should come by invitation only. My husband worded the letter very nicely, but frankly, we're tired of being used like a hotel. No one ever says, "I'll help you." They just expect us to be there, to be glad they came after they've raided our refrigerator. Well, it's caused some family drama. Do you or any of your readers know how to handle this situation? Were we wrong to ask people to wait for an invitation? Signed, JDK in Wisconsin. Well, readers, what say you? Write into Heloise at Heloise.com.
And the third and final advice column is Carolyn Hacks, a Washington Post Writers Group columnist. Write to Carolyn Hacks, Washington Post Writers Group, 1150 15th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., or email tellme@washpost.com. He embraced her Indian culture until they got married. Dear Carolyn, when I married my white husband, I thought I could have the best of both worlds. He participated in Indian festivals and agreed to an Indian wedding ceremony, performing an Indian dance on his own. He also tried to learn Hindi with me for a while. Since we've been married, though, it feels as if he was just placating me. He wants me to change my last name, go to church, which we never did, and raise our children Christian, which I am not. He doesn't want to give future kids a name that sounds too Indian and has been complaining more about going to Indian festivals. He said I need to let go of my past life and create a new life with him. One based not on my Indian American upbringing, but on what I interpret as white America. This sounds racist to me, but he tells me I'm being racist and trying to colonize him by wanting to keep certain Indian things in my life. I am more American than Indian, and that will never change, but I don't want this small part of my culture to die and not teach these traditions to my kids. Am I being a bad wife by wanting to keep my identity and not say goodbye to my past life? Am I being selfish? I think I should seriously consider divorce. Signed, Indian American. Indian American, you thought your marriage would solidify things. He, apparently, thought it would change them. The latter means a hard think on whether you want to stay married under these unexpected new terms. It's really one big yes or no question. You can treat it as a bunch of smaller yes or no questions if you want. Names, religion, festivals. But that's moot if he isn't budging. This is your life, and you're the last word on your terms. Marriage counseling is a natural recommendation here. But if he won't concede the basic point that you're being your same self while he's changing the terms, then listen to your heart. Because denying that point says he's not coming from a place of good faith.
Purdue Fort Wayne staging new play as director set to retire. by Corey McMakin of the Journal Gazette. Purdue University Fort Wayne's Department of Theater opens John Proctor is the Villain tonight. Mark Ridgway, Associate Professor of Scenic and Lighting Design, directs the show with a cast of 13. He is retiring from the university after this semester. Ridgway answered the following questions via email. The conversation has been edited. Question: John Proctor is the Villain will be a new title to some people, and there are probably some who aren't familiar with The Crucible. What's your quick elevator pitch to get people interested in coming to the show? Answer: John Proctor is the Villain is a play set in a small town America where a high school English class is reading the American classic play, The Crucible, written by Arthur Miller. The latter play revolves around John Proctor, the hero who is accused of witchcraft. The play is set during the Salem witch trials, by a teenaged girl he has an affair with. Miller uses the play as an allegory for McCarthyism, but some of the girls in the English class aren't buying that John Proctor is the hero of the story, but see him as the villain due to him being married and having an affair with a teenager. Other scandals are brewing in their community, and they challenge their teacher's view that this character could be any sort of hero. Question: what do you hope people are thinking about the play after they leave? Answer: I hope the audience will consider how society view the problems that continue to exist today, revolving around women experiencing sexual or other types of trauma at the hands of men, thinking they can still treat women in any manner they desire. Although some people may feel the Me Too movement has run its course, there are still so many things that women are experiencing, and much of society is not always interested in hearing their voices. This play allows some of those voices to be heard in often funny but poignant ways. Question: are there unique elements with John Proctor that make it a good learning experience for the PFW students, either on stage or behind the scenes? Answer: the characters in this play are so wonderfully created by playwright Kimberly Bellflower. The students are making remarkable discoveries in rehearsal, and the story is quite compelling. I believe this play will allow our students great opportunities to portray these fascinating characters. Question: you're a professor at PFW, but what have you learned during your time working with the students in the Department of Theater? Answer: one of the most interesting things I have learned about working with our students is their willingness to explore their characters and their performances with the courage to try anything to create the best performance as possible. Question: how long have you been with the university, and what's a favorite moment or production you have worked on during your time there? Answer: I have taught at PFW for 22 years. One of the productions I hold dear is one I directed in 2019, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. It was a marvelous play, and I loved working with a wonderfully talented cast. Question: what's next for you after you leave PFW? Answer: I plan to work on projects I normally did not have time to do while being a professor in the department. I will be finishing writing a play that has been in the works for about 3 years. I already have plans for 2 other plays I'm interested in writing. I also will hopefully direct more theater works in the near future.
There are several art exhibits in the area and different activities involving music, theater, and other museums. The first one is Annual Juried Student Art Exhibition, opens Monday and ends March 16th. The Visual Arts Gallery at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, located at 2101 East Coliseum Boulevard. It's open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Admission is free. You can find out more information at pfw.edu. There is a reception from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. this coming Thursday. Also open is the 2025 Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. It will end April 6th. Also, Movement Black Art in Focus ends March 2nd. Fort Wayne Museum of Art is located at 311 East Main Street and is open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, and Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Saturday is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Go to fwmoa.org for more information. Arts Festival seeks entries. The Fort Wayne Arts Festival is changing things up for 2025. Previously a weekend-long outdoor event, it will now be a one-day event taking place twice a year. The festival will have an indoor event from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. May 17 in the former Ulta retail space at Jefferson Point. There will be an outdoor event from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. September 13th in the shopping center's courtyard. Artists are being sought for the festival with applications due April 1st. There is a $35 jury fee to be considered. Application forms and guidelines are available at jeffersonshopping.com or by email to 1021creatives@gmail.com. The 10 is word 10 is spelled out and 21 is numerical. Arts United unveils nominees. Arts United of Greater Fort Wayne has announced nominees for the 2025 Arts United Awards. The nominees are A Creative Life, The Architecture and Art of Alan Grinsfelder, Apple Orchard News, Collective Expressions, David Fenstermacher, Eleanor Marine, Emma Organ, Aaron Bean, Joanna Borkova Morunov, Katie Gray, Kaylin Bouten, Lisa Ellis, Maria Tan, Melissa Depew, Michael Green, Fort Wayne Philharmonic's Family Series, Plein Air, Syracuse, Sarah Harbor, Seth Green, Stories from the Stacks, Theater for Young Readers, Straw Bale Art Trail, The Peacemakers, The Prom, and Vanessa Escobar. Categories for each nominee were not listed in a news release, but Arts United previously solicited submissions for the categories of Distinguished Artist of the Year, Emerging Artist of the Year, Margaret Ann Keegan Award for Arts Education, Outstanding Artistic Endeavor, and Volunteer of the Year. The awards celebrate the people, organizations, and projects that make significant contributions to communities in the region through arts and culture. Winners will be announced March 19. Youth Arts Month coming to Wabash. Honeywell Arts and Entertainment will present Youth Arts Month in March with art exhibits, performances, and activities for children and families. The Next Generation exhibit at Honeywell Center's Clark Gallery in Wabash will feature work of students in a variety of media. It runs March 1st through the 31st. Youth Arts Activity Days on March 8 and 22 at Honeywell Center will include performances from 10 to 11:45 a.m., workshops from 9 a.m. to noon, and craft stations through the morning. Wabash Valley Music Association presents a concert by the Wabash County Honors Band and Choir at 7:30 p.m. March 14th at Honeywell Center. There is also a performance of A Grand Time at 7:30 p.m. March 29th at Honeywell Center. The concert features nearly 100 pianists from students to professionals, with as many as 24 playing simultaneously on 12 grand pianos. Tickets start at $10. Registration for events is available at honeywellarts.org or by calling 260-563-1102. We will now read editorials for Friday, February 21st. The opinions expressed are those of the writers and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers, Jennifer or
Stuart. Greed, power propel nation's new leadership. Not only did my employer of 40 years have gas turbine engines under development, it had a whole corporate division devoted to that effort, Solar Division, International Harvester. Over time, improvements in conventional gasoline and diesel engines brought gas turbine efforts to a halt. During roughly the same time frame, my fellow truck designer, Kikyo Hayashi, talked me into investing in Toyo Kogyo, parent company of Mazda because of its singular focus on Wankel rotary engines. I lost my money when rotary engines proved to be less fuel efficient than typical reciprocating engines. After a few more decades, long-term care for our environment began to make electric vehicles look like a better answer for road transportation in general. Not everyone agreed, but I jumped on board fairly early and am still very happy with that decision. It was recognized that wide-scale availability of charging stations would make the EV option more convenient for all users, and we were guaranteed that such a systematic improvements were coming. So now, rather than letting honest development, experimentation, and evaluation take place, a certain individual in the White House has decided to end previous commitments to a charging grind. Although there was once a democratic system in place that consisted of three separate branches of government and two parties full of voters who could moderate what was happening in their country, now life-altering changes of direction are being made by a single man with an oversized marker. And while tying Donald Trump to EV smashing, has anyone questioned how that relates to his evil twin, Elon Musk, who was largely responsible for EV success on this continent? The answer is simple. Musk took all he could get from the center to left segment of the population and is now doing the same with the center to right bunch. Looks a lot like the transition Trump himself has made over the decades. Written by Richard Hatch of Fort Wayne.
The second letter to the editor is titled Rocky Start Portends a Long 4 Years. How would one describe the start of the Trump presidency? Unmitigated insanity comes to mind. Much of the focus, quite rightly, was on Donald Trump's pardoning of his fellow felons. While saying we must stop criminals from coming across the border, he unleashed 1,500 homegrown ones who attempted the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. Some of his actions are petty and vindictive. See Milley, General Mark. And some are just loony. See Canada, Greenland, and the Panama Canal. Some pronouncements are untethered to reality. He claims to have ended the Green New Deal and the electric car mandate. Those don't exist. He said President Joe Biden should have gotten the Hamas hostages freed 2 years ago, before they were taken. He threatened to impose a 100% tariff on Spain because it is a BRICS or B-R-I-C-S country. BRICS is an acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It is a collection of 10 countries formed as a counterweight to the G7. Spain is not a member. There is no reason for most people to know that, but perhaps the President of the United States should before he threatens an ally. Speaking of tariffs, Trump has promised to lower prices while at the same time imposing 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico. Good luck with that. All of this, of course, doesn't address the ghastly collection of crackpots he has chosen as cabinet members. See Kennedy, Robert F. Jr. He finished that week with his grotesque and obscene comments about the air disaster in Washington, D.C., all of that in just 2 weeks. This letter was written by Elton Powers of Pleasant Lake.
Power play. As Indiana ponders its energy future, consumer costs must remain primary focus. Indiana lawmakers are right to explore new energy solutions, but House Bill 1007, which passed the House last Friday and accelerates the adoption of small, modular nuclear reactors, warrants closer examination as it makes its way through the Senate. A 20% tax credit for reactor manufacturers makes sense as an incentive to bring jobs and investment to Indiana. But the bill's provision allowing utilities to recover development costs before obtaining a certificate of public convenience and necessity risks, turning ratepayers into financiers for unproven technology. The Indiana Senate must take a measured approach to ensure that bleeding-edge innovation doesn't drain Hoosiers' pocketbooks. Furthermore, nuclear power should not be the be-all, end-all solution for Indiana's energy needs. The argument that SMRs will drive down electricity rates ignores the increasing affordability of renewables. Journal Gazette columnist Krister Watson, who has worked on science policy projects, made a crucial observation in a December 2023 column. He said a solar farm just across the Ohio border produces 600 megawatts, far more than a Wells County natural gas plant, and more than some coal plants. But without the long-term waste storage and water use concerns that come with nuclear power. SMRs are often touted as a safer, more scalable alternative to traditional nuclear plants, but they remain at best a theoretical solution. The U.S. currently has no operational SMRs. Only China and Russia have successfully brought them online, and the industry's track record here is one of escalating costs and canceled projects. The failure of the NuScale SMR project in Idaho, detailed in Watson's column, should be a cautionary tale. Before investors walked away, cost estimates ballooned from $4 billion to $9 billion. Indiana's utility customers have already seen this story play out before. The abandoned Marble Hill nuclear power station left Hoosiers on the hook for $2.8 billion in losses, proving that the burden of failure is often passed down to ratepayers. The fundamental flaw in HB 1007 is its willingness to shift the financial risk away from utility shareholders and onto everyday consumers. As Bloomington Democrat Representative Matt Pierce abruptly puts it, if SMRs are such a good investment, let private investors, not utility customers, bet on their success. That's not to say Indiana should turn its back on nuclear energy altogether. The transition away from fossil fuels requires a diverse energy mix, and advanced nuclear power may one day have a role to play. However, the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity process ensures that energy investments are prudent, necessary, and beneficial to taxpayers. In other words, prove the concept. Nuclear energy may be in Indiana's future, but it is irresponsible to force ratepayers to shoulder financial risk.
The following opinion was written by Nancy Carlson Dodd, who is a Fort Wayne resident and writer. That was then, this is now. Just look around. Signs of change are everywhere. Recently, I once again watched the mail being delivered by a lovely small white U.S. mail vehicle. It's not quite a truck, but a vehicle especially created for the mailman, mailwoman to sit comfortably with the mail close by, all organized for ease. The steering wheel is on the right side of the front seat to allow the carrier to just reach over, open the designated mailbox, slip the mail inside, close the lid, proceed a few inches to the next of the five mailboxes in that group, and insert that mail until all five boxes are now served. That done, away they drive to serve the next close group of mailboxes. No matter the weather, the mail carrier is warm and dry. I know I have fallen into the trap of simply taking all of this for granted, but for some reason this made me recall how the mailman delivered the mail when I was young. Of course, it was always a man. I don't recall ever seeing a woman delivering the mail in those days. The mailman had to walk the entire route carrying a large bag over his shoulder filled to the brim with mail. He would walk down the sidewalk and go from house to house. At each house, he would walk onto the porch and insert the mail into a mail slot. The mail then would just flop on the floor inside the house while the mailman would proceed to the next house where he would repeat that monotonous task. Because of the vast amount of mail during the Christmas season, the mail sometimes would be delivered twice in one day. Snow, sleet, rain, or hail, we deliver for the U.S. mail. Oh gosh, that just popped into my head. That used to be a motto we would repeat over and over, and it was true. No matter the weather, the mailman would trudge through it. No excuses. Another thing we take for granted is that all stores are open on Sunday. When we were young, no stores were open on Sunday. None. Nada. Period. Amen. Grocery stores and department stores were simply closed. How did we ever survive? And then, of course, until 2018, Indiana was one of nearly a dozen U.S. states to ban all Sunday alcohol sales outside of bars and restaurants. I'll never forget one Sunday, probably about 2009, before the do-it-yourself checkout, I was in line at Kroger and the couple in front of me had a cart full of alcohol. As they pulled up to the checkout counter and began to unload their cart, the checkout clerk said kindly to them, "I'm sorry, but we are not allowed to sell alcohol on Sunday." Both the man and woman looked at her like she had just announced the end of the world. "Are you kidding?" the man spurted. "No, sir. I'm sorry, but it is the law here. No alcohol sales on Sunday." "We're from out of state. We're going to a party this evening, and we are in charge of bringing the alcohol," the man shouted. "I'm so sorry, sir, but that's the law." "Oh, wow," I thought. "What a pickle they're in." I didn't have the heart to stand there and watch what happened next, so I just backed up and went to the next checkout. However, as a result of that occurrence, whenever something unpleasant happens to me, I console myself by remembering that that incident and realize that the trouble I'm having is nothing compared to theirs. And to be doubly safe, I never volunteer to provide the alcohol for a party. Sure saves me a lot of money.
The following is from the Bloomberg Opinion editorial. "Refugee ban reneges on a promise to our allies. Republican and Democrat administrators alike benefited from the sacrifices of Afghans who put their lives on the line to support the U.S. troops and spread American values in the 20-year war against the Taliban. Both have now betrayed the trust those allies placed in them. The previous White House botched the August 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan, ushering the Taliban back into power. It tried to atone in part by smoothing pathways for military interpreters and others who qualified for special immigration visas, as well as refugees, including judges, journalists, and women's rights activists, to immigrate to America. By the end of President Joe Biden's term, close to 5,000 Afghans a month were successfully resettling in the U.S. The current administration has thrown the system into turmoil. Its broad-ranging suspension of foreign aid has cut off funds that special immigrant visa holders were relying on to travel to the U.S. and upended the resettlement services meant to help them once they arrive, including rent support for their initial months. Meanwhile, a 90-day freeze on refugee admissions has blocked other Afghans who had received approval to migrate and who rightfully fear for their safety. Together, the measures have affected roughly 45,000 special visa applicants ready to fly out of Afghanistan and at least 15,000 qualified refugees, according to the coalition #AfghanEvac. Many of the latter are currently in Pakistan, which has launched a wave of deportations aimed to push migrations back across the border. Thousands of other Afghans whose cases are still in the application process now face uncertain futures. This second abandonment compounds the damage to U.S. credibility and standing caused by the first. Allies asked to support America in future conflicts will surely wonder whether any promises made to them will last past the next election. China and other rivals have gained yet another example to add to their long narrative of U.S. capriciousness and hypocrisy. More scrutiny of foreign aid, which the president campaigned on, is fair game, but a blanket refugee ban is cruel and unjustified, as is the pause in aid to organizations supporting food security, education, and other critical services around the world. Congress should press the White House to rethink both.
We will now read primetime listings for Friday, primetime TV listings for Friday, February 21st. Beginning with Wayne 15 CBS at 8 o'clock is NCIS Sydney. At 9 o'clock is Fire Country. And at 10 o'clock is SWAT. On WPTA 21 ABC at 8 o'clock is Shark Tank, followed at 9 p.m. by 2020. On WPTA 2 NBC, beginning at 8, is Happy's Place, followed by another episode of Happy's Place at 8:30, and at 9 o'clock is Dateline NBC. On WFWA 39 PBS, at 8 o'clock is Washington Week, and at 8:30 is Firing Line with Margaret Hoover. At 9 o'clock is American Masters, and at 10:30 is Anthems. And finally, on WFFT TV 55 Fox, at 8 o'clock is College Basketball, Michigan State at Michigan. And at 10 o'clock is Fox 55 News First at 10. And at 10:30 is The Locker Room. We're going to read a few local sports highlights next, but if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated Magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the past week's local, regional, and national sports stories during Sports in Review. And now we'll read a few highlights from several local sports stories for you, starting with
Wrestling State Finals. Senior Saver's final shot to secure his spot among Belmont's best, by Josh Patterson of the Journal Gazette. Perhaps the third time will be the charm for Belmont's Gavin Davis. After seeing his freshman season cut short because of an injury, Davis qualified for the Wrestling State Finals as a sophomore. Despite sporting a shoulder braces as a junior, he again earned a trip to the state, where for the second time, he lost in the opening round. With the 87th annual state finals returning to Gainbridge Fieldhouse after moving to Evansville's Fort Center last year because of the NBA All-Star Game, a now-healthy Davis stands ready to earn a spot on the podium and carve out his spot in Belmont's wrestling history.
In women's college basketball, Hoosiers get hot from deep to upset number 8 Buckeyes. From staff and news services, Dateline Bloomington. Yarden Garzon had 16 points and 11 rebounds. Sydney Parrish and Shea Chieski also scored 16 points each, and Indiana hit 9 three-pointers in a 71-61 win over number 8 Ohio State on Thursday night. Garzon made 3 threes, Parrish and Chieski each sank 2, and the Hoosiers built a 57-39 lead after 3 quarters. Indiana finished 9 of 17 from beyond the arc, while Ohio State was just 6 of 18. The Hoosiers improved to 4-3 against ranked teams. Jelani Cambridge led Ohio State with 18 points, and Cody McMahon had 14. After the Buckeyes opened the second quarter on a 9-0 run to tie the game at 26, the Hoosiers closed the half on a 14-2 run for a 40-28 lead at the break. Ohio State didn't score and had 3 turnovers in the last 3 minutes and 42 seconds. The Buckeyes trailed by double digits for all but a few possessions of the second half. In other women's college basketball, number 1 Notre Dame and number one, Notre Dame in Miami. In Coral Gables, Florida, Sonia Citron scored 19 points. Hannah Hidalgo added 18 and to power the Irish. PFW 69, Northern Kentucky 57. PFW held the edge in rebounds 36-33, points off turnovers 24-13, and fast break points 17-6, and points in the paint 50-24.
Purdue Fort Wayne golfer honor earns Horizon nod. Purdue Fort Wayne's Olivia Jang was selected as the Horizon League Golfer of the Week. Jang earned runner-up at the Islander Classic on Tuesday for the second runner-up finish of her career. She shot 75, 72, 77 for a total of 224. In high schools, there's been an area signing. Homestead senior Daniel Martinsky will sign March 10 to play hockey at Central Michigan.
Canadians best U.S. and OT to capture Four Nations title. McDavid nets winner in title game intensified by political controversy. By Jimmy Golan of the Associated Press, Dateline Boston. Connor McDavid scores in overtime to give Canada a 3-2 victory over the U.S. in the Four Nations Face-Off Championship game Thursday night as the North American rivals turned what had been a tune-up for the 2026 Olympics into a geopolitical brawl over anthems and annexation as much as international hockey supremacy. Brady Tkachuk and Jake Sanderson scored for the Americans, and Connor Hellebuyck stopped 22 shots in regulation. Nathan MacKinnon and Sam Bennett scored for Canada, with Jordan Binnington making 25 saves in the first three periods. As with an NHL playoff game, the teams returned to their locker rooms at the end of regulation to return for a series of 20-minute full-strength overtime periods. The already ripe rivalry took on an added intensity with the cross-border animosity following President Donald Trump's tariff threats and talk of making Canada the 51st U.S. state. Trump called the American team Thursday morning to wish it well, then turned to Truth Social to poke Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau with more annexation chatter. The political backdrop, combined with the quality of the round-robin game, which the United States won 3-1 on Saturday, to bring the atmosphere of a Stanley Cup final or Olympic gold medal game to the TD Garden.
From the NBA and the Associated Press, Pacers shake off rust after slow start to top Grizzlies. From Indianapolis, Tyrese Haliburton scored 22 points. Ed Miles Turner had 17 points, 10 rebounds, and a season-high 7 blocks to help the Indiana Pacers pull away from the Memphis Grizzlies 127-113 on Thursday night. Indiana missed its first 7 shots and first 8 three-pointers in the first game since the All-Star break, but still managed to score a season-high 78 points in the first half. 7 Pacers scored in double digits, and Haliburton had 9 assists. In other NBA action, the Celtics beat the 76ers 124-104. The Knicks beat the Bulls 113-111, and the Cavaliers defeated the Nets 110-97.
ABS 1, umps 0. First challenge by Cubs hurler Nets reversal from David Brandt of the Associated Press, Dateline Glendale, Arizona. Chicago Cubs pitcher Cody Poteet believed the 95-mile-per-hour fastball he threw to Los Angeles Dodgers slugger Max Muncy was in the strike zone. Plate umpire Tony Randazzo disagreed and called it a ball. Instead of arguing, Poteet simply patted the top of his cap, signifying he wanted to challenge the call. After a few seconds, the verdict was ready on the video board in right center field. Poteet was correct. The pitch was a strike, just catching the bottom of the zone. This concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. This morning's reading of the journal will repeat later today at 6 p.m. Today, Friday, February 21st, we are sending birthday greetings to 2 listeners, Dennis C. of Fort Wayne and Margie P. of Fort Wayne. Your readers today have been Jennifer with
Stuart.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.
You've been listening to volunteers read the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, which is broadcast every weekday at 9 a.m. and rebroadcast at 6 p.m. and 3 a.m. Check out our podcast of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette and obituaries on our podcast page at audioreadingservicepodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, please give us a call at 260-421-1376.